tonight is basically going to be broken into three parts, not counting the introduction that I'm giving. We're going to have a brief response in the form of the project overview, permits, and status. We're going to have some presentations concerning the initial response to the coalition comments, and then some initial responses to other public comments, both written and oral tonight. The presentation is really going to come in six parts. The first part is going to come from Rich Southwick. He's going to talk about the introduction to the project. He's going to talk about project components. He's going to talk about project permits, and he's going to talk about project status. Our next presentation is going to come from Adam Hobson. Adam's going to talk about hydrologic impacts. In particular, he's going to talk about baseline studies and monitoring plans. Our next presenter is going to be Kelly Greaser. Kelly is also going to talk about hydrologic impacts. She's going to talk about general water quality. She's going to talk about general water quantity. And she's going to talk about probable hydrologic consequences. Our next presenter is going to be Art O'Hare. Art is going to talk about alluvial valley impacts, and he's also going to talk about hydrologic damage prevention recommendations. Our next presenter will be Jim Height. Jim is going to talk about soil reclamation plans, and then our final presenter will be Rick Kinsella. Rick is going to talk primarily about the responses, or he's going to primarily talk in terms of responses to the public comments, coal bed methane issues, uranium, paleontological resources, BLM-owned coal issues, and initial response to other public comments. So with that in mind, Your Honor, we'll start with Rich Southwick. If I could, Your Honor, just a brief introduction of Mr. Southwick. Rich is the Vice President of Environmental, as I mentioned earlier, with Great Northern Project Development, LP. He has over 30 years of experience in major industrial source permitting and industry-related environmental regulatory programs. Rich received his BS degree in natural resource management from the College of Environmental Science and Forestry at Syracuse University in 1979. Prior to joining Great Northern Project Development, LP, Rich served as a consultant to industrial clientele, including Great Northern, and providing assistance with permitting efforts and consultation on environmental regulatory matters. Rich also spent over 3 years working with the Montana Department of Environmental Quality on the development area-wide industrial source emission control plans for communities of Billings and East Helena, Montana, and currently serves as a member of the Montana Air Pollution Control Advisory Council. And as I mentioned earlier, Rich is going to limit his responses to project components, project permits, and project status. Rich?
Thank you, Lawrence. I thought we'd start out with, as Lawrence mentioned, with a project overview in the written comments and in the public comments tonight. I heard a lot of talk about the overall project, and folks didn't understand what the project entailed and what the project components were. And I thought I heard some confusion about whether or not the GTLE plant was also part of the project. So I wanted to give, Your Honor, give the panel an overview of the project and then what permitting you've got to look forward to with this project and the status of it today.
Are you hearing that back there? Is it?
I'm sorry, yeah.
Maybe you should put that mic, you're talking that way and the mic's over there, so maybe.
How's that? Good. The project is really made up of three major components. The mine, which will supply raw material. The IGCC plant, or sometimes referred to as the coal to hydrogen to electricity plant. That plant will generate electric power for sale, and it will capture carbon dioxide, compressed carbon dioxide, that will be for sale to oil producers in the Williston Basin. And then the third component are the linear facilities, what we refer to as the linear facilities of the project, the CO2 pipeline delivering the compressed CO2 to the oil fields, and transmission lines delivering electric power from the plant itself to a substation that would deliver it to customers. Primary products of this project, and when I talk about the project, now the South Hart project, I'm talking about all the components together. The primary products are low carbon power and compressed CO2. And when I refer to low carbon power, the process from run-of-mine lignite to briquettes, briquettes to hydrogen, hydrogen to electricity, and the captured CO2 to the oil fields. The project will gasify the lignite, and that gasify product will be further processed to remove everything but hydrogen. Hydrogen will be the fuel of the combustion turbine that drives the electric generator. The combustion turbine will have virtually no carbon emissions. I heard Wade Schaefer earlier expressing concern about the contribution of coal to greenhouse gas emissions. This project would have exceedingly low greenhouse gas emissions. In fact, at this point, we calculate that we'll have a greenhouse gas footprint less than the equivalent natural gas-fired IGCC plant. With respect to, before we leave this slide, I wanted to focus a little bit on the briquetting process, just to make clear the relationship between South Hart Coal's project and the GTLE plant. The run-of-mine lignite, as the project is proposed and designed today, would use the GTLE process. That is to say, it will use the technology developed by GTLE to remove moisture from the coal and to make it form a briquette. The reason we remove moisture should be fairly obvious. It improves the heat value of the coal. It takes energy to boil water. If you remove the water from the coal early in the process, you don't have to expend energy to remove it in the gasification process. The GTLE technology allows that moisture to be removed more economically. The briquette is important because the gasifiers we are using, or the plant has been designed to use, require the raw material, the coal, to retain its structural integrity. The gasifier is a vertical vessel. Think of it as an LPG tank turned up on its end. If we put run-of-mine lignite into that gasifier, the run-of-mine lignite just collapses to the bottom and plugs it. The purpose of the briquette is so that it retains its structural integrity during the gasification process. We are not using the GTLE plant. That plant is a GTLE process plant intended specifically to demonstrate their technology. It will not be used as part of the South Hart project. We're here today to talk about the mine permit application, and I wanted to put that into context. There was a lot of talk about the disappointment of people in the audience and the people in commenting and even in the written comments that there was no EIS, there was no discussion of air quality impacts so that the community could evaluate those and comment on those. There was no opportunity to talk about wastewater discharge and those parameters. That's because of the way the North Dakota has set up the permitting process. The South Hart project components will require a number of permits. As we're here today to talk about the surface coal mine component of the South Hart project will require a permit from the Public Service Commission to mine coal. But before a spade of dirt can be turned, despite the fact that we may get a permit from the PSC for a coal mine, before a spade of dirt can be turned, we also have to get an air quality permit to construct. With this project, that air quality permit will address both the mine and the plant. The mine and the plant, because there's mine mouth configuration, are considered one source of air emissions under the Clean Air Act of North Dakota, and so the air quality permit to construct will cover both the IGCC plant and the mine. The IGCC plant is a coal conversion facility, in regulatory speak, in North Dakota, and requires a site compatibility certificate from the PSC. That process includes a lot, if not all, of what an EIS would otherwise include. It will include a socioeconomic study. It will include a traffic study. It will include a number of the components ordinarily included in an environmental impact statement. We will have to have a site compatibility certificate from the Public Service Commission before we can build that plant. And before we begin mining at 2.4 million tons per year, which is what we proposed, we have to have some place for that coal to go, and that coal is intended to go to the IGCC plant. The linear facilities, like the IGCC plant, also are subject to the requirements of a site compatibility certificate. And so the pipeline and the transmission line will have to get siting certificates from the PSC. The IGCC plant will not be operating without the linear facilities in place. Other permits that will be necessary, water discharge permits, that's specifically for the mine. The IGCC plant will be a zero liquid discharge facility. And the wetlands permits, the mine site does include areas of wetlands. I think there's about 26 acres. Some of the, my associates here might be able to clarify that if that's an issue. I think there's about 26 acres of wetlands that would be disturbed by mining. We have proposed a wetlands mitigation plan, which would restore the wetlands and reclamation. That's part of our application to the PSC for the mine permit, but it also must be approved by the Army Corps of Engineers. We've asked the Army Corps of Engineers for a jurisdictional determination. That's forthcoming. They say they have it. Following that, we'll get a permit, what's sometimes called a dredge and fill permit, a Clean Water Act 404 permit, to allow us to remove the wetlands and then replace them as part of reclamation. So what we're here today to talk about, despite the fact that there's a larger project here with several components, what we're going to focus on today in our response to comments is the coal mine. Each one of these permitting processes includes a process similar to the one we're undertaking today. It includes the filing of a permit application by South Hart Coal. It includes a review of that application for completeness by the in case in the air quality permit, the Department of Health with the site compatibility would be the PSC and so on. It includes an opportunity for public review and an opportunity for public comment, just like the process we're going through today. So where are we? I've heard a lot of questions today, particularly not so much in the written comments, but today a lot of questions about what's the project? Where is it going? The project conceptual design has been completed, and that conceptual design includes the mine plan, which many of you have had an opportunity to see in the permit application itself. It includes what we refer to as a pre-FEED report for the IGCC plant. FEED stands for front-end engineering and design. So we have paid for the front-end engineering, the pre-FEED report from Black & Veatch. The plant has been conceptually designed. We understand from that conceptual design what the cost of the plant was going to be and its the emissions from the plant. In this case, there won't be any wastewater discharge from the plant because it will be completely consumed in the process and recycled. So the plant has been largely designed. And we have identified the preliminary linear facility corridors. That's for the pipeline and the transmission lines. We filed the mine permit application, as everyone here surely knows. We filed that application in March 2010. It's the reason we're here today. We're in the process, the PSC is in the process of reviewing that, and we're here today to speak to the concerns from the public and our neighbors. We are proceeding with this mine permit application for a couple of reasons right now, for a couple of reasons. I know there's some questions about, well, geez, you haven't filed an air quality application for the plant. You haven't filed a siting certificate application for the plant or the linear facilities. You're just going ahead with a mine permit application. Why? We allocated an enormous amount of resources to characterizing that site. Some of those characterizations, the overburden characterization and the groundwater hydrology, those characterizations have a long shelf life. Vegetation, wildlife, those characterizations have a short shelf life. Those characterizations have done, and while they are fresh, we want to take advantage of that to use them in supporting our proposed mine plan and reclamation plan. The other reason that we're going forward with a mine permit application in the absence of further development on the other components is to make a demonstration to potential investors and potential customers that the site has been determined to be suitable for project development. And having the mine permit in hand contributes to that demonstration, gives investors confidence, and gives potential customers confidence that the project has overcome a hurdle, one of many that it will have to overcome in the development process, and that its likelihood of success has been enhanced. The mine permit application proposes a 2.4 ton, million ton per year operation. That 2.4 million tons per year is designed specifically to support the IGCC facility. We are not going ahead in the near future with further development of the IGCC plant or the linear facilities. And the reason for that is because we have not sold the power. We have a lot of expressed interest in the CO2 from the oil fields, but we have not been able to sell the power. A plant like the one we have designed that is very low carbon, it has zero liquid discharge, it captures the CO2 and delivers it to the oil fields, is enormously expensive. The product of that plant then becomes very expensive. In the absence of required carbon constraints, it's not competitive. But we stand ready to, so that development's on hold, but we stand ready to continue that development if and when a U.S. energy policy that might require carbon capture or carbon storage or carbon constraints would make this project competitive. In the interim, we're going ahead with a mine permit application. We plan in the next month or so to file an air quality application for the mine only. And the reason we're going to do that is because from time to time, we have a need for coal to test technologies, or we have a need occasionally for coal to send to customers or potential customers to evaluate its feasibility in their process. In the past, we have obtained that coal on site with a drill rig and a core barrel, and that is enormously expensive coal. If we're fortunate enough to get a permit to mine coal from the Public Service Commission, we intend to open the pit in the same place it would be open for the 2.4 million ton per year operation, but at a much smaller rate, with a maximum of 150,000 tons per year. We probably will never achieve that rate. Otherwise, the pollution controls and the rest of the mine plan will be in place. We will just be mining at a much slower rate. So that is the best description I can give you of the project components at this time and the status of the project and the permitting regime that we've got to look forward to.
Your Honor, that concludes Mr. Southwick's presentation. Would you like us to move on with the next?
Yes, please.
Okay. Our next presenter is Adam Hobson. Adam is a senior groundwater and surface water hydrologist with Golder Associates, Inc., with over 12 years of experience characterizing the hydrologic process and impacts. He is accomplished in design, planning, implementing of hydrologic field investigations, development of conceptual hydrologic models, assessment of surface water and groundwater dynamics, hydrometry, and aquifer testing and analysis. He has an MS degree in civil engineering with a concentration in water resources from the University of Colorado, and is a professional geologist in the state of Wyoming. As I indicated earlier, Mr. Hobson is going to be discussing the baseline studies and monitoring plans for the project.
Thank you, Lawrence. Can everybody hear me? As Lawrence outlined, I'd like to start by addressing one of the coalition's primary concerns, namely the hydrologic characterization as it relates to hydrologic impacts. The comment suggests that the hydrologic characterization is inadequate, and therefore determinations of PHC's probable hydrologic consequences are speculative and without basis. It would be helpful here to define probable hydrologic consequences in terms of the mine permit application as we move forward. The Public Service Commission defines PHC as the projected result of proposed surface coal mining and reclamation operations, which may reasonably be expected to change the quantity or quality of the surface and groundwater, the surface or groundwater flow, timing, and pattern, the stream channel conditions, and the aquatic habitat on the permit and adjacent areas. An essential component of the PHC determination is that they are based on baseline data. Next slide. South Air Coal disagrees with his claim that the hydrologic characterization was inadequate. The characterization was thorough and comprehensive to describe the hydrology and geology, and the PHCs, the probable hydrologic consequences, were determined using baseline hydrologic and geologic data and other information, all in accordance with North Dakota statutes and rules. Next slide, please. To demonstrate the adequacy of the program, I'd like to talk a little about the baseline hydrology and overburden programs that were conducted to characterize the proposed mine permit in adjacent areas. Baseline studies began by developing detailed plans of studies or scopes of work that were submitted to the PSC for review and approval. These scopes defined, among other things, the types of data to be collected, locations of data collection points, data collection methods, and frequency of monitoring. The hydrologic baseline studies conducted data continuously for over 3 years. Data collected during this time allowed for characterization of seasonal variation in things such as stream flows, groundwater levels, and water quality, among others. Furthermore, the study time period exceeds the typical period of baseline studies seen in North Dakota coal mining operations. In addition to the data collected directly by South Har Coal, we also reviewed long-term data records, such as stream flow records collected by the U.S. Geological Survey back to 1946, climate data collected at stations in the area from 1900 to establish long-term patterns in the data. All of these studies were conducted with ongoing coordination with PSC staff to keep them informed of the progress of the programs. I'd like to spend a little bit of time describing the amount of data that was collected to further demonstrate the adequacy of the program. The overburden and soil sampling program was conducted to describe the material overlying the coal that will be removed, handled, and replaced during the mining and reclamation process. The program followed PSC guidelines and regulations. Specifically, boreholes were drilled at a density of greater than 1 per 40 acres as required. I believe the permit has this at 37 acres. Samples were collected every 5 feet in each borehole, and samples were analyzed for the required parameters and additional parameters to better characterize the overburden geology. Over 129 boreholes were drilled to assess overburden characteristics, with over 2,400 samples collected, resulting in over 20,600 analytical results. The soils program was of similar magnitude and resulted in nearly 2,000 borings. Surface water flows in the Heart River, South Branch Heart River, and other unnamed tributaries were measured with 5 staff gauges and 8 gauging stations, resulting in over 1.5 million measurements of stage and flow. We heard in verbal comments today, this evening and earlier, this morning, that there was a concern as to the adequacy of the data collected at these stations due to submergence of flumes observed in late May of this year. As many of you are aware, there's been significant runoff and subsequent high stream stage occurring throughout this part of the country, and the area around South Hart is no exception. Flumes used to measure stream flows on ephemeral and intermittent streams were designed to measure low flows and may be submerged during peak flows. Due to the semi-arid climate and precipitation-limited hydrologic system in western North Dakota, flows in these small streams are predominantly low, less than a few CFS, cubic feet per second. As such, Describing the duration and variability of these low flows is essential to properly characterizing the hydrology and determining the PHC, probable hydrologic consequences. Surface water program also included monitoring of study area ponds and reservoirs, and variations in surface water qualities were assessed through the collection and analysis of 179 surface water quality samples, resulting in over 7,000 analytical results. I'd like to pause a little bit to point out that indicated in these slides where all this information is found in the permit application. Next slide, please. The groundwater program described the regional and local hydrogeology and included a review of over 700 regional borehole and well logs. There was construction of 39 monitoring wells, screening discrete hydrostratigraphic units, including the coal and the units above and below the coal, to measure water levels and collect water chemistry samples. We conducted over 58 aquifer tests, including slug and constant rate pumping tests, to estimate hydraulic parameters such as hydraulic conductivity. Next slide. The groundwater program further included the collection of over 800 groundwater level and over 100 seep and spring flow measurements to assess seasonal fluctuations. The groundwater program further resulted in the collection of over 260 groundwater quality samples, resulting in over 11,400 analytical results, again, to assess seasonal variation of the system. In addition to the data collected from the monitoring points, SHC implemented a well and developed spring survey program that many of you may be aware of. The program identified and characterized the condition and use of wells and developed springs within 2 miles of the proposed mine area. Landowners within this 2-mile zone were informed of the program and invited to participate through certified mail. Make sure I'm on the right place. Through 2010, 88 wells and springs have been surveyed in the area. The surveys include the location, condition, and construction of the wells and springs, the type and frequency of use, and pump tests and water quality sampling were conducted. SHC will be using this information to help replace water supplies diminished or disrupted in quantity or quality as a result of surface mining activities. This well survey program ties into the restoration and replacement of water supplies. Restoration and replacement of water supplies is an essential component to the hydrologic reclamation plan. South Arc Coal will work with property owners to ensure that nearby water supplies are not interrupted due to mining, and when needed, quickly provide suitable replacement water. South Arc Coal has committed to the restoration and replacement of water supplies in the permit application, specifically stating wells whose supply is diminished or disrupted in the quality or quantity as a result of surface mining activity will receive pump adjustments, improvements, or be supplemented from a supply that will provide the well owner with the same quantity and quality of water that is presently being used or otherwise compensated according to North Dakota statutes and laws. In summary, contrary to claims made by the coalition, the hydrologic characterization is more than adequate to describe the pre-mining baseline conditions and is in full compliance with North Dakota statutes and rules. As such, the hydrologic characterization provides a sound technical basis for determination of probable hydrologic consequences and for development of monitoring plans. I'd like to shift gears here a little bit to discuss the monitoring plans that were also subject of several comments. The monitoring plans were questioned as to their adequacy. The purpose of the hydrologic monitoring plans is to identify the extent to which mining affects groundwater and surface water quantity and quality in accordance with North Dakota statutes and rules. The monitoring plans require PSC approval and are based on the probable hydrologic consequences. The proposed monitoring plans will be capable of identifying potential affected water supplies before adverse impacts interfere with their use. The monitoring plans require routine reporting to the Public Service Commission. South Arc Coal will be submitting data from the monitoring program to the PSC as required by North Dakota statutes and rules. These data submittals will discuss observed changes and include interpretations of their significance and possible effects on water supplies. Finally, addressing the concern that the public will not have access to these data reports will be available to the public through the PSC. Thank you.
Your Honor, that concludes this portion of the presentation. We have two more presenters.
Thank you.
Actually, we have four more, but two more will come up to the table. Your Honor, our next presenter is going to be Ms. Kelly Greaser. Dr. Kelly Greaser is a senior hydrologist, with Golder Associates, Inc., with over 12 years of experience in geology, geochemistry, and hydrogeology for the mining industry and industrial contamination sites. Her experience includes work on a wide variety of projects involving water resources, water balances, mine dewatering, contaminant transport, geochemical and hydrological assessments, and developing conceptual geologic and hydrologic models for several sites. She has a PhD in geological engineering from the Colorado School of Mines and is a professional geologist in Wyoming. As I indicated earlier, Kelly is going to be talking about groundwater quality, groundwater quantity, and probable hydrologic consequences.
Thank you, Lawrence. Can everybody hear me? As Lawrence indicated, I'd like to talk about groundwater quantity first. A lot of concerns were, next slide. Several concerns were raised in the written comments and the oral comments today. Most of them dealt with the justification of the extent of groundwater impacts and also that a detailed evaluation and understanding of groundwater quantity is required. South Arc Coal stated in the application that probable hydrologic consequences were assessed based on data collected from the study area, the field investigations that Adam just described, professional judgment with the aid of various tools, including analytical and numerical solutions, and information obtained from technical publications. South Arc Coal described that dewatering will reduce groundwater storage and availability within the area. It will create a cone of depression. It will cause water levels to decline, and it will also cause groundwater to flow predominantly into the reclaimed spoils toward the center of the cone of depression during and after mining. In addition, the extent and magnitude of drawdown was evaluated using a calibrated numerical groundwater flow model. This model incorporated the mine plan to predict PHCs. The model predicted that drawdown in groundwater greater than 5 feet would be contained within 1 mile of the mine pits. Impact to groundwater wells was included in the application based on the model results and other methods. These impacts are outlined in the application in Table 2.5-4. And as stated in the application, SHC is committed to the restoration and replacement of water supplies that may be impacted by mining activities. And as Adam just described, the monitoring program will identify potentially affected water supplies prior to those impacts affecting their use. Now I'd like to discuss potential impacts to groundwater quality. The Coalition stated in written comments that the application lacks evaluation of or plans to mitigate impacts to groundwater quality and that there was a high potential to impair surface and groundwater quality. We also heard quite a few oral comments today, people expressing concerns regarding groundwater quality. South Arc Coal provided in the application an evaluation of probable impacts to groundwater quality and a comprehensive description of potentially acid-forming materials and potential constituents within the overburden that may be mobilized. South Arc Coal completed a thorough characterization of the overburden to assess potential impacts. This characterization included comparisons and data from other mines. It included information from the baseline study that Adam described, and it also included additional evaluations that South Hart Coal completed to better understand the overburden and potential impacts. All of this information has allowed South Hart Coal to prepare for potential impacts. Those preparations follow established regulations and include the monitoring plan, which Adam described, and other potential mitigation techniques. I'd like to describe just briefly the overburden characterization program. As a result of that program, South Hart Coal identified materials with high sodium adsorption ratio, that's SAR. It's a common problem in North Dakota. It's well known. There's regulations in place. PSC is very aware of this issue. And I will talk about the management plans that will be in place to deal with high SAR. The overburden characterization program also identified the potential to increase total dissolved solids, or TDS. And again, this is a common problem or a common issue in North Dakota mines. There's regulations in place, and I will describe the management plans to deal with that. There was also a general concern brought up about metals leaching. We heard a lot of folks concerned about uranium, mercury, some other heavy metals. South Hart Coal has completed quite a bit of testing above and beyond the regulations requirement to better understand metals leaching. There are some of the metals that were detected in the material from the testing completed is similar to concentrations that are already present in background groundwater and surface water. This is prior to mining. And then some of the metals detected are naturally enriched in the soil, again, prior to mining. And some of those metals are identified as an issue that requires special handling in the site, in the area, in the region, as established in the literature. So regarding the overburden characterization program, the additional testing that South Hart Coal completed to evaluate the toxic forming materials, as North Dakota refers to them, this additional testing included acid-base accounting, elemental analysis, synthetic precipitation leaching procedure, and a groundwater leaching procedure, and I'm going to review each of these separately. So for the acid-base accounting, a lot of you may have heard about acid mine drainage. This acid-base accounting testing is what helps us evaluate the potential for that. Based on the results of the ABA testing that's completed at the site, acid generation is not going to be an issue at this location because the overburden is overwhelmingly alkaline, and alkaline is the opposite of acidic. And in general, compared to other coal mines in this area, western coal mines, acid generation is not an issue. With regard to the elemental analysis, this is also in the application referred to as a whole rock acid digestion. It's literally where the entire overburden material is dissolved in a strong acid, and it's analyzed for individual elements. This test does not indicate what is mobile or what is available for uptake. The results for this site do not identify unexpected enrichment of elements of potential concern. And what that means is essentially some of the metals that are present in the overburden, they're a problem in the region. And that's, like I said, it's established in the literature, for example, arsenic. And these are pre-mining concentrations. So one of the other tests completed is the SPLP. That's the synthetic precipitation leachate procedure. It is a standard method. It's an EPA method. It's conducted with a synthetic precipitation, literally laboratory-made rainwater. It's made with a very dilute solution of sulfuric and nitric acid at a pH of 5 because rainwater is naturally somewhat acidic. It's a short-term leach test for mobility. The test itself relies on fairly aggressive grinding of the material itself, in this case the overburden, compared to the ripping that will occur for the overburden in mining. So in that respect, it's the results may be a little higher than it would be under field conditions. The results from the test do not absolutely predict any particular water quality, whether it's surface water, groundwater, or anything like that. And for a lot of reasons, a lot of very detailed reasons, the results have to be used cautiously. There's a lot of differences between how the test is completed in the lab compared to what's going to occur if the mine goes to operation. So regarding the results for the SPLP tests, the results indicate most constituents are not expected to be present in concentrations that would exceed surface water and groundwater quality standards. Generally, the overburden does not contain toxic forming material, according to the North Dakota rules and statutes, except for high sodium absorption ratio, which I will describe the management methods, and slightly elevated arsenic, which again is already present. It's already present in the overburden. There are moderate concentrations in surface water and groundwater. And to investigate further the potential leaching of arsenic at the mine site, South Hart Coal completed what we called a groundwater leaching procedure. It's essentially equivalent to the synthetic precipitation leaching procedure, but it uses groundwater instead of this lab-made rainwater. The results of that test indicate that the SPLP test is conservative with respect to groundwater. In other words, when the overburden is placed back in the pit the potential leaching of arsenic from groundwater is likely to be less than what was indicated from the SPLP test. So in terms of overburden handling, in terms of basically the methods that will be taken to minimize impacts, overburden stockpiles are composed of natural soils. This is the material that's already there. There's nothing going to be, that overburden is not going to be treated. It's not going to be altered. There was some concern about hazardous waste disposal at the site. That's not going to occur with these spoils. The soil handling procedures will minimize impacts, and that includes separate stockpiles of overburden and suitable plant growth material. And it's a long acronym, SPGM. Basically what that means is topsoil and subsoil that meets North Dakota cover requirements. And incidentally, based on our analyses right now, there is actually currently out at the site topsoil and subsoil that doesn't meet North Dakota cover requirements. That material will not be used as cover during reclamation. So when reclamation occurs, there will actually be an improvement in soil quality according to North Dakota regulations. So only this suitable plant growth material, this SPGM, will be used to form the near surface soil. And that's what protects groundwater because it's critical for plant growth. Runoff from the stockpiles will be collected in sedimentation ponds, and the high sodium absorption materials will be covered appropriately. The overall goal of the overburden handling program is to achieve rapid regrading, soil placement, and revegetation, and that's what will minimize impacts to groundwater. This follows PSC regulations. Reclamation will be completed as soon as possible, and it will be completed concurrent with mining. So now I'd like to talk about some of the general comments regarding probable hydrologic consequences. One comment related specifically to the fact that groundwater-surface water interactions were not included in the PHCs, that the effect of mining on the flow in the Hart River was not included, and potential impacts to surface water from discharge of potentially impacted groundwater was not included. In response to that, SHC acknowledges that as a result of PSC and public comments, we realized additional discussion regarding potential impacts to base flow for Hart River needed to be included in the revised application. I'm going to present a brief discussion of that additional information here. As Adam said, we used long-term records available for various different media. This included USGS stream flow gauging station. The period of record for that is 32 years. It starts in 1946. There were some missing years in between. That's the staff gauge near the city of South Hart on the Hart River. Based on that 32 years of record data collected by the USGS, the average annual flow in the Hart River is slightly over 29 cubic feet per second, or CFS. Average annual base flow is 1.1 CFS. And what base flow is the component of stream flow that is from groundwater. So it's groundwater discharge to surface water. That 1.1 CFS is only 3.8% of average annual flow in the Hart River. So that indicates that groundwater discharge to Hart River, to the Hart River, is a very small component of the total annual flow. So based on this quantity alone, impacts to base flow are unlikely to significantly impact total stream flow in the Hart River. In order to evaluate groundwater surface water interactions, various methods were used, including the numerical groundwater flow model. That model was calibrated to the average annual base flow, that 1.1 CFS. Based on the model results, the predicted reduction in base flow is less than 40%. This predicted reduction represents less than 1% of average annual flow. Based on these predicted impacts to base flow in the Hart River, which are insignificant, they're not predicted to cause material damage. They're not predicted to significantly impact downstream surface water rights. Currently, there are only two water rights between the mine and above Patterson Lake applied to the city of South Hart. They're also not predicted to result in material damage or significant changes to the fisheries or aquatic community. And that's especially because the community that's already present in the Hart River is adapted to naturally occurring highly variable conditions. And that includes things like freezing, dry periods, flooding, and just all these natural changes that already occur. Regarding impacts to surface water quality from discharge of potentially impacted groundwater, since groundwater represents only about 3.8% of average annual flow to the Hart River, any discharge of potentially impacted groundwater to the Hart River is such a small component, it's unlikely to significantly affect the surface water quality. Further, potentially impacted groundwater will not discharge directly to the Hart River. Any potentially impacted groundwater will flow through the unaffected aquifer prior to reaching the Hart River, and that aquifer will go through natural filtering and polishing processes in the groundwater, and also there will be dilution with unaffected regional groundwater. And as Adam described, the monitoring plan in place will identify potential impacts prior to affecting the use of the various water resources.
Your Honor, Kelly's presentation. We'll move right on to Art O'Hare's presentation. Dr. O'Hare is a Vice President of Hydrology with Norwest Corporation based in Denver, Colorado. He has BS and MS degrees in watershed hydrology from Colorado State University and the University of Arizona, and in 1975 earned his PhD in forest hydrology from the University of Minnesota. For the past 36 years, he has worked as a hydrologist in industry, in research, and as a consultant. He has conducted baseline hydrologic investigations for a wide array of resource development projects, including coal, oil, shale, and minerals. He has performed the hydrologic and geochemical analysis and interpretations in support of plans to manage and treat mine water and in assessing the effects of mining on hydrology and water quality. As I indicated earlier, Your Honor, Art is going to be talking about alluvial valley impacts and hydrologic damage prevention recommendations. Art, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. In both the written comments and in the comments that we received today, there were suggestions that the applicant has not substantiated that the site is not an alluvial valley floor, and I'd like to address that comment. First of all, extensive study was completed and submitted to the PSC in July of 1988 for review and decision concerning the alluvial valley floor determination. This study followed alluvial valley floor guidelines and previous studies that have been done on various coal operations or mining projects throughout the western United States. It included a detailed evaluation of previous alluvial valley floor studies in the area. It included extensive geologic and geomorphological characterization of the valley area. Land use considerations went into the study. And a component or several components of these studies are to assess flood irrigation practices and potential and to identify sub-irrigation in the area. Both the study and the raw data have been provided to both the PSC and to the coalition, and the PSC has determined, based on that information, that no alluvial valley floors occur in or adjacent to the proposed South Hart coal permit area. Related comments concerning alluvial valley impacts, both verbal comments and written comments concerned water quality or heavy metals in the ponds and their potential to be discharged to surface water. The written comments discuss variability in water quality in both the coal and the overburden groundwater and in the overburden leaching tests, and had indicated based on that variability that mine water discharge would need to be diluted with water from other sources to comply with discharge limits. Wanted to address the misconception in that comment. First of all, other water sources are not used to dilute mine water for discharge. On the other hand, it's important to realize that mine water discharge includes water from a variety of sources. This includes water pumped from the mine pit, which is comprised of both coal water, overburden groundwater inflows, as well as surface drainage within the pit. Includes surface drainage from roads and facility areas, includes surface drainage from areas, undisturbed areas, or prior to mining and topsoil stripping and during topsoil and overburden removal. And then it also includes surface drainage from various areas under various stages of reclamation, from initial reseeding to topsoil placement and reseeding to later stages just prior to bond release. All these various sources of water are collected and would be routed to our sedimentation pond. One component, the overburden runoff, reference was made to some of the overburden tests and some of the reference to some of the extremes in those overburden tests. And the extremes in these tests are not indicative of what you expect from overburden drainage. Overburden drainage water is exposed to a variety of different types of overburden material, and an average of the overburden test results is more representative of what you would expect for water from that particular component. This drainage from overburden material is only one source of water entering the mine pond. The water entering the ponds will be a mixture of water from various sources. For instance, the undisturbed area runoff actually has some of the highest of a few of the metals that are found, such as arsenic, and that would be compensated by water from other sources, perhaps from the coal that has a lower constituent concentration for that, but a higher concentration for another. So the net effect is that the pond water will be a mix of water of various sources. And we've analyzed the variability in the data from these various sources. We feel that the mixed water will be able to meet the effluent limits with the exception of sediment. And, of course, that's what the pond is designed, is to remove sediment, which will be our primary treatment system. The sedimentation process will also remove additional concentrations of some of the metals, particularly some of the total metals. And so we fully expect that the robust water management system that has been developed for this project will meet all the discharge limits that have been set to protect the uses and water quality criteria for the stream. I might point out that North Dakota NDPDES permit has to be obtained for discharge from the ponds, and these will establish limits for discharge. and monitoring requirements to demonstrate that these limits are met. Water that does not meet those limits would not be allowed to discharge. I'd like to move on to a discussion of some of the recommendations that were made for hydrologic damage prevention. I won't try and address all of them here, but a couple of them related to the larger buffer zone between the permit boundary and the south branch of the Hart River. And related to that was a comment that locating ponds away from drainage areas where they're subject to flooding. Concerning the buffer zone, the buffer zone has been established that has been set at an additional 25 feet beyond the minimum required by regulation, provide some additional buffer between the stream and the mine facility areas. Most of the areas that are close to the buffer zone are the ponds and the ditches that are designed to collect the water so that they can be treated for sediment removal prior to discharge to the stream. These ponds that are located in outside the buffer zone are some of those are located within the valley area. They're on the old alluvium, which is the higher, not the active floodplain part of the alluvium, but the older alluvium. And these tend to be fairly fine-grained materials. They're located a little higher from the river, where the risk of flooding is rare. And we've designed berms around these ponds that will provide additional protection from flooding so that we don't believe there's a risk of flooding our ponds out due to their location. The sediment ponds need to be located between the mine and the south branch of the Hart River in order to be able to collect and treat the drainage from the areas that undergo initial topsoil removal and overburden removal, and also from these areas once reclamation has been established. These areas also have to drain through the ponds until approval has been reached for bond release that the ponds are no longer necessary. That concludes my discussion.